Ooh, that was a five. Bichon.
We are back here with the Evolving Angler Podcast. I have a very special guest today. His name is Chris Haley. How you doing, buddy?
Doing all right.
Man, it's good to have you on. This guy is so full of knowledge. I'm excited to have him on an episode for you guys. You guys will absolutely love what we're talking about today. We're going to be talking about transitioning, the muskie transition from fall to winter muskie fishing, and kind of what to expect, where to find these fish, and it's just going to be a really good episode for you guys that are muskie fishing fall and winter. You were born and raised in Kentucky, right?
Yeah, Azure, Kentucky.
And so how did you get into fishing in general? Because I like to ask people, everybody has their own story, and it's something for me that I think is intriguing. Everybody's story is intriguing in some way. So how did you get into fishing in general? What was you fishing for when you first started fishing?
All right, yeah, well, I was born into it. my family always had a houseboat on Norris Lake in Tennessee, and you know, I was just a small child, 2 years old, and I go out with my dad, and while he was bass fishing, I'd always have a pole with a minnow or a nightcrawler dragging behind the boat. And
yeah,
I think when I was 2 or 3 years old, I had a 4 or 5 pound bass. So,
oh man,
that kind of started it all up.
hard to beat that.
And then, of course, I was lucky enough to have a grandmother that was fishing crazy too, and so all summer while we were off school, we were fishing every day with my grandmother, and you know, she took us to fish for any kind of panfish, anything about a hook, basically. She's from the Great Depression, so she eat everything she caught. So,
oh, yeah. Well, see, my grandmother liked to fish, too, and her and my mom would take me and my brother a lot of times to Artie Bailey. We'd bank fish Artie Bailey Lake.
Oh, yeah. That's what she loved, drowned in nightcrawlers.
Oh, yeah. That's what we did. Bobber the mealworm, bobber the nightcrawler, and I actually hooked up on a pretty big catfish that broke my line. I probably had 4 pound test on, you know, but in my mind, you know, I was 10 years old.
That's probably the first time I've seen a muskie was with my grandmother and my cousin, and we were fishing on the middle fork of the Kentucky River below the dam at Buckhorn Lake, and she was fishing for trout and suckers and just whatever she could catch, you know. And my cousin, he was probably 14 years old, and I was probably 7 or 8, I guess, and he was throwing a Zara Spook, and one charged the spook right at the shoreline and eat it. And I was like, the biggest fish I ever seen in life at the time. I mean, I was a kid. And I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, and he was from Indiana. So, you know, they had Webster Lake and all that. He'd seen muskies before, so he knew what it was. And that was my first encounter with a muskie anyway. So,
yeah. Well, as I said before, it's very good to have you on. You are full of knowledge. You are a previous president of Muskies Inc., Daniel Booth, Chapter 52, correct?
Yes, yes. I was a president for probably 8 or 10 years. I can't remember exactly.
And you helped start it, right?
Yeah, we were actually in Chapter 45, and, you know, they were out of Cincinnati area, and us East Kentucky boys, we was four and a half hour drive up there to just go to a meeting or whatever, so we decided to start our own chapter down south, you know. So a bunch of us got together and started the Daniel Boone chapter, and we basically just fished Cave Run, Buckhorn, and Green River at the time.
Okay.
And now we do stream outings and just all kinds of stuff now. I mean, we're just not limited to one lake. I think we've done some in Tennessee at Melton Hill Reservoir. And
nice.
We've had tournaments with other chapters and stuff. So it's,
I've been able to fish a few of you guys' tournaments this year. I definitely like the vibe and the attitude. Everybody's always so nice and helpful. And
yeah, that's why we... you know, that's what I like about Muskies Inc. too. It's everybody's got a common goal, is it's a muskie conservation, and we just get to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, obviously the competition's there, but it's all about everybody getting out, having fun on the water, and just promoting, like you said, conservation and catch and release, and
right,
and just loving the sport of the muskie fishing. But yeah, so you're a previous president. Was there a reason you guys, other than just like the long drive, was there another reason like why you maybe decided to start it? Or?
We really wanted to start more of the conservation in our area.
Okay.
The current club that we ran, this wasn't helping conservation wise to, you know, local lakes. And we wanted to do more. We wanted to higher size limits, more fish stocked, which we were able to do that to an extent.
Yeah.
We got the Buckhorn Lake changed to 40 inches twice. When they did the statewide 36 inch limit, they dropped it back down to 36, and then they realized that wasn't enough to keep the lake going, so they added it back to 40 just recently.
Nice. And you've got a lot of tourney experience, too, as you said.
I've been tournament fishing probably since, I guess, 94 anyway.
And you had a funny story about one of the tournaments, right? You kind of told me earlier.
Yeah.
You should tell that again.
Oh, about the Lake Kincaid story. Me and my partner, Tony Fugit, we were fishing at Lake Kincaid at the Fall Brawl. And we've actually won that tournament a couple of times, but this is the time we come in second place. We had five fish in the boat already, and this was going into Sunday morning. And a little guy in a little rinky bass boat comes up to us and said, you're all fishing in the wrong place. And we'd already caught five fish there, so our thinking was, well, we're in the right place, you know.
Yeah.
And we just had caught up one more and then hooked one probably 48 inches on the short line trolling. I said, no, I think we're in the right place. He said, dude, told us, you need to go down to the dam in the first big cove with this weed bed in it, and it's all the way to the back, there's a big weed bed. It's like in a circle in the middle of the cove. We just do circles around it. He said, I caught five or six there the day before. And he said, one of them was mid-40s.
Oh, that's a tank.
Yeah. I was like, well, he said, you just throw bass spinner baits. I was like, okay. I said, yeah, we just kind of blew him off, you know, and didn't think much about it. And then he went on to tell us about this 50-incher he caught that he got it in the net and it swam through the bottom of the net. And he was probably state record and all this. You know how that goes. And it's like, well, that just kind of turned us off of him more. And
probably thought it was just some guy
blowing smoke. Yeah, we thought it was some guy blowing smoke. So, we decided to go on and fish our pattern that we were on, and we didn't catch any more fish, but we had six fish in the tournament, which is pretty decent.
Yeah, you would think that would win a tournament.
Yeah, yeah. So, we roll in, and we're doing the weigh-in. So, these guys come up, and they've got six or seven fish. I guess they had seven. They had one more than we did. They had one fish the day before. And they said, well, we got a funny story to tell, why they were accepting their money and their trophy. He's like, we met this guy out on the lake in this little bass boat, and he said, he took us up and showed us this weed bed in the head of the cove. He said, in the last hour of the tournament, he said, we caught all these fish in the last hour throwing spinner baits.
Gosh.
I was like, oh, man. I said, well, from then on, I changed my whole point of view of everybody. It's like, everybody's got something to tell you, and there's truth to some of it, and take them up on it.
That's great.
Yeah, just go try it anyway. You know, even if they're right or wrong or blowing smoke, they could not be, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
So
you could have had 12 muskie.
Yeah, we could have 12 muskie day, you know. We thought we knew it all.
It happens, man. It happens.
That's kind of like my first muskie career was like I thought I knew it all, too, because I'll tell you about this. I told you my first muskie I caught was trout fishing.
Yeah. So tell me how you got into that
and we were in the college, and I did some guiding for the muskie guides, but I did crappie and bass, you know. When they had overflow clients that didn't want a muskie fish, I would take them out.
Okay.
But so this one day, my buddy comes, he said, the trout are biting up this stream. So, you know, we went up the stream and we were bass trout fishing.
Okay.
We got to this place and a big muskie swims by, and my buddies went crazy because he was from where there's muskies and he's used to fishing for muskies. And, you know, I looked at him and said, well, you know, we can't catch that with trout poles, you know. He said, I'm going to go back to the dorm room and get my muskie equipment. I said, well, that's 30-minute drive, you know. I said, why would you do that? He said, he's that crazy over him. So, I said, well, I'm going to trout fish. I'm staying here. You can go get your poles, you know.
Yeah.
So, he comes back, and he fishes probably 30 minutes and gets this 47-inch muskie. And he just grabs it, and he said, I'm getting it mounted. And he left me sitting there in the woods at this big hole of water and left his pole and everything there. I said, well. And a few minutes later, I spotted another muskie going along the edge of the shore, opposite shore, pretty much where we saw the first one. And I picked the pole up, and I think it was an old Grim Reaper jerk bait of some kind.
Okay.
And I made about three casts with it, and it just turned and just inhaled it. It was like 38 inches.
Nice.
I was like, well, that was interesting, you know, and I turned it loose. And so, basically, we come back the next day to the same hole of water. And my buddy's, you know, we just got one muskie rod, and he ends up getting a 48-incher, or 49, and I've been 49. So, he decides to get it mounted. So, he's going to get them both mounted on the same log facing each other, because this is two biggest fish of his life.
Yeah. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. But he's excited about it. So,
yeah.
He hands me the pole again, and I catch another one that day, but it was small, too. And I said, well, you know, I've got two muskies in 2 days, and all these muskie fishermen, you know, talk about this stuff.
Fish a 10,000 cast, and you've done it in five.
I went to the tackle shop and bought me a muskie rod and reel and spent $9 million on baits. And
yep.
Pretty much was broke after that.
All downhill from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I went on, I think I caught 8 or 9 fish that year, you know,
yeah.
Fishing from the shore mostly, and whoever's boat I could crawl into. And the next year, I caught probably 20 fish. No, not bad from the shore. And then I had a boat down there for a while, and that's when I started guiding a little bit. And then I caught 50 fish. I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing, this musky stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the following year, it's like, I had twice as much musky tackle and lures and all this, and I knew, you know, I was a man, knew what I was doing. I caught like 6 fish.
Really?
It was like, it went crash to the bottom. I was like, I said, well, maybe I should back up and punt and see what this, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. So,
well, it happens.
I started getting in the boat with everybody that would let me get in the boat with.
That's what it takes.
Yeah. I'd go to the tackle shop and I'd say, somebody's going musky fishing. Can I go with you? No. I got my own stuff. It's the, oh, yeah, come on, jump in here. So,
nice.
I fished with everybody. I fished with some of the biggest names in the Silver Musky Club at the time. That's what the oldest club's going, and the Musky Ink guys, and, you know, all these old guys would let me fish in the back of the boat with them, and I soaked up all the information I could soak up.
Yeah.
So, come about 96, I was still guiding for bass and crappie, and I decided to guide on my own. I opened the Buckhorn Guide Service at Buckhorn Lake, and, you know, I started fishing a lot more tournaments. I fished the IMTT, the Illinois Tournament Trail. That's where the tournament I was talking about earlier about coming in second place on the deal. And I fished the PMTT, the Raleigh and Helens tournaments. Pretty much fished every state that the art of fish, because there's probably 2 or 3 I've not been to. I think I got Iowa and North Carolina and Indiana. It's only 2 I've not fished that has muskies.
Nice. Well, you definitely grew to the point where you guided. I guess you got. Did you guide full time?
I did guide full time for about 15 years.
Nice.
And then, you know, the kids come along and
yeah. Makes it a little tougher.
Yeah, I had to get a real job.
Yeah.
So I did geology work for a long time.
Yeah,
and,
so back up a little bit. So you, when you got into musky fishing and you were trout fishing, you were actually attending Morehead State, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and yeah. So for geology, right?
Right.
So I guess did that, I was going to ask if that kind of intrigued you into looking into musky, but I guess you got into musky straight from right there at the bank then.
Yeah, the first one, that first strike on the walk, the dog glider just nailed the, put the nails in the coffin right there.
Yeah.
It's like, you're hooked.
Yeah. And you know, you and I've talked about, you know, bass fishing has its own realm of difficulties. I love bass fishing. I love crappie fishing.
Yeah. I tournament bass fished, it used to be called the Red Mint Tournament Trail.
Okay.
And I started doing that as soon as I was able to get a legal signature, which was 16 years at the time. I started at 16 years old.
Okay.
And I fished some, probably 4 years until I started college in the the Red Man Bass Tournament Series. So,
nice.
So I wasn't a novice fisherman. So, but
let's talk about some transitions here with muskie. We are we're obviously at a point where it's late. I guess getting late fall. We're looking, the temps are dropping, and I guess, you know, to be relevant to the season we're in right now, let's discuss a little bit about the transition of muskie from fall to winter bite.
Yeah.
You know, where you can find them, what to expect, their temperament and all that. So, like, for instance, right now on Cave Run, you know, that's my home lake. It's Cave Run. The surface temps right now are around, I think on the main lake, it's like 67, 68. Back up in the river, I've noticed it's like 60, 61, 62. From what I've gathered, I guess a lot of those muskie are kind of pushing a little bit more towards the river. Is that right?
Correct. What you're going to start happening is the fish, as the weeds die, you know, the muskies will start migrating towards the break lines and transition near woody timber, places that they can stay all winter, that the bait fish will be. You'll have some flat fish that'll stay in open water. They'll just kind of sit suspended all winter, you know, if the bait fish are there. But that's usually associated with flats and river channel breaks.
Okay.
You know, they won't be far from a river channel break, but they'll be on the edge of a flat, but they'll be suspended in 20 foot of water. You know, those fish you can catch trolling, but they're really tough to catch casting. You have some fish that'll be associated with shallow main lake points. Usually, the water, when it turns over, the fish will be more scattered out. So, you're looking at water when it gets 55 degrees. They could be anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, my favorite thing to do is find a shallow sloping bank that's either clay, dirt, or pea gravel, rock, something that absorbs a lot of light, or something, you know, that'll warm up pretty quick.
Okay.
And find something that's windblown, that you know, they'll push the shad and bait fish onto those structures.
Okay. Like rock walls and things like
that,
maybe?
Not necessarily rock walls, but just the direction, you know, you want to go to the windward side, you know, where the wind's blowing into it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
The push sides, where it's getting all the push from the wind.
Okay.
So, you know, it'll pile the bait fish up and the warmer water, so... You know, the same thing that happens in spring. So, pretty much what you're looking for when the water warms, you're looking at in the same situation when the water's cooling.
So, it's almost like similar to the spring bite, I guess.
Correct.
Okay.
Except the bait size. You know, instead of using little small baits, you're going to be using bigger baits because the bait fish are bigger.
Okay.
You know, but they'll relate to structures like creek channels and some timber a lot more.
Okay.
You know, they're looking for a spot that they can sit and ambush bait. Some of the more southern lakes that still has weeds in the winter, the fish would be on the weeds, but to be on the outside edges of it, they won't be buried back up in it.
Okay.
But for most part, it'd be break line fishing.
Now, do you notice a big difference in muskie in the rivers versus the lakes? Or?
Yes. That's why in my guide service, a lot of times I would go from lake fishing and, you know, I'd fish in lakes to October while they were still in the weeds and stuff. And then as soon as the fish pulled off the weeds and got scattered out everywhere from the water turnover, I quit the lakes.
It's all river.
Yeah, I just go straight to the rivers. The fish in the rivers, you know, they're in the current. They feed all the time. They don't get in a negative, no feed vibe like the lake fish do. The lake fishing after turnover can get real finicky. I mean, you can go out there and catch 10 in one day, and the next thing you may go a week and not see one.
Yeah. I know right now in Cave, it's been a little bit tough of a bite.
Because it's getting ready to turn over.
Yeah. And this tournament we just had this weekend, I was able to pre-fish and locate 3 fish upriver.
Right. And in the cooler water.
Yeah. And I think most of the guys in the tournament were fishing the main lake. And,
yeah.
And that's why we were one of the only boats to see muskie, which we didn't put any in the boat. But
so you take that, and 2 weeks from now, when that cooler water hits, those fish on the main lake would be doing what you're doing this week.
It'd be a lot more upriver then, huh?
The fish would be doing the same pattern.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They're just not transitioned over into that.
Oh, okay.
Because you were fishing, I'm assuming you're fishing timber and creek channel patterns and all that.
Yeah.
Out deeper out. In the river situation, though, you know, it doesn't matter if you're deep, shallow, whatever, the fish are still going to be ambushing, but they'll be migrating down to deep holes. What they're doing, they're just following the sucker pattern. The suckers are leaving the shallow shoals where they feed at, and they're going down into the deeper water.
Okay.
And that's where they'll winter at. So, wherever the suckers winter at, that's where the muskies will be.
That makes sense.
So, you know, in finding the key spots for sucker migration, you want to find a good sandy, gravelly bottom. You know, sand is perfect for it's got full worms and microorganisms that suckers eat.
Okay.
So, that's where they're going to spend the winter, you know. I don't know if you've ever been in the river and you see a big mud trail behind a school of suckers where they're just sifting through the mud, eating the little bugs.
I have not.
Yeah, but if you fish the rivers enough, you'll see that.
Okay.
So, and they're usually starting doing that. You'll start seeing that stuff, you know, right about now because the suckers are already moving to the deep holes.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, the muskies fall.
I guess that's their biggest meal or what they have most affinity for in the rivers and creeks and suckers.
Yeah, you know, some of the rivers have shad in them, but the populations are small.
Yeah.
You know, and the predominant bait fish is usually red horse suckers.
I've seen, actually went and targeted suckers earlier this year about 3 different times.
They're tougher to catch than a muskie.
They're tough. You know, I looked out, though. Cameron Pallet, shout out to him. He's got a couple of videos on his YouTube channel, and I talked to him. Me and him have become pretty good buddies over the years, or over the past year. He was kind of giving me some tips, and he does it pretty, not going to say pretty often, but he's done it more frequently than I have.
I tell you, if you want to learn to catch suckers, you know, really good, start YouTubing some of these European carp fishermen guys.
Oh, yeah?
And use some of their techniques with these big, flat, heavy weights that they use.
Okay.
And these small hooks. And we're used to, like, when you feel a bite, you set the hook. That's why we were raised to fish.
Yeah.
They don't fish that way.
Really?
They use these heavy weights. And when these fish pick this bait up and they move a little bit, they get an instant.
Yeah.
You know, that weight tugs on them right then and sets the hook.
Hooks it, yeah.
So, if you go to that European system, you'll probably catch more suckers.
I had to try that because, I was sight fishing for them. And I had a little tiny hook and I had a little tiny split shot.
Yeah, anytime you feel them to hit it, they spit it out already.
Yeah. It was really tough. It took me probably 3 trips and I probably caught 6, but it was hours of fishing. You know,
right,
so,
that's what I'm saying. They can be tough as a muskie. Yeah.
So, I got like, here's the most difficult thing for me was trying to keep the bluegill and the smallmouth off my redworm before the sucker could get to it.
Because,
you know, even if I'd throw it out way ahead, I'd see him feeding. And I'd throw it out way ahead of him, and I'd watch. And next thing I know, here comes a bluegill and just smokes it. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, I would probably go through 2 dozen of redworms per sucker that I'd finally catch. And so, it's frustrating. But it was a little bit easier then because they were all really shallow, and I could see them, and I could cast ahead of them. And more times than not, they would just pass up my redworm.
Yep.
But every now and then, like I said, hours of fishing. Like the first day, I fished like 8 hours and caught 2. But I was fishing a little tiny creek. They obviously spook really easy, so it was a little bit tough to get near them to cast without, you know, spooking them. But yeah, so that makes sense, that being what they have such a high affinity for, suckers in the rivers and creeks, that they would follow them to the deeper holes. So.
Right. Well, another thing about the rivers, why we really like them is, you know, the river's flowing all the time, so the muskies have to keep moving. It ain't like they can just sit there and be inactive and not burn any calories.
Right.
So, you know, they have to swim all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's sitting there swimming in place, he's burning calories, and either he's going to get really skinny and die, or he's going to eat something and stay healthy, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, usually river fish are a lot more
lean, I guess.
Yeah, well, they're not lean, but they don't turn down a meal.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. They're going to, you know, if they get a chance to eat something, they're going to eat it.
Okay. That makes sense, too, because, well, see, I've been told, now, I've seen some big muskie come out of Licking River.
Oh, yeah. But that's my biggest is out of Licking, yeah.
Well, see, I've had a lot of people tell me that if the state record's going to be broken again, it's probably out of the lake. Do you think it's true, or is it just where they sit on the bottom, or they don't really have to fight current as much?
Well,
or,
that's the thing is,
I wanted your opinion on that.
Yeah, they burn more calories in the river system. The thing a river has going for it is usually the water's cooler and oxygenated, so you might get 2 or 3 more years added lifespan. Say, you know, they burn out, what, 15 years on the lake, maybe 12. Yeah. Between 12 and 15 years is maximum in the lake. You might get 17 or 18 out of a fish in the river system.
Ooh.
Just because of the water temperatures and added oxygen. Less stress on a fish.
Yeah.
But the bait fish quality, their food quality, they don't have this high fat diet of shad that the lake fish have. So they're not going to be as heavy.
Yeah.
You may get the length that you need to be a state record, but you won't have the weight.
Maybe a spawn full eggs.
Yeah, it'd be close, but I just don't think you can get the weight.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough part. So, yeah, so the differences, I guess, in river versus lake, muskie are more apt to bite, maybe, I guess, or not necessarily turn down a meal in a river as opposed to a lake. And I guess, is that, like, technically this time of year, like fall and winter bite, especially?
Right.
Temps are dropping. I know they're getting a little more lethargic, I guess, as any fish.
And in the lake situation, high pressure frontal situations are terrible in the lake in the winter. Yeah, you get a high front come in, big blue sky, and pretty sunny day, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
But you still can go to the river and maybe pop a fish because, you know, they're going to eat.
Yeah.
And that's one reason we move our guide service to the river systems in the winter. You know, like I said, is the chances of hooking up are a lot better.
It's kind of odd how that works because even walleye, like overcast, you know, even days of this rain and, you know, overcast and pike as well. When I went to Ontario, they told us, they said, the worse the weather is, the better the fishing's going to be. You know, obviously not a tornado, but they said, you got rain, you got overcast, windy. They said, it's going to be real good. They said, it's about like musky fishing. They said, you get some overcast, you know, rainy days, nice and cool. You're going to catch a lot of pike and a lot of walleye.
Yeah, muskies are the same way.
That's, I wonder why that is. See, me, if I'm a muskie, I'm going to want a bright day.
It's a visibility. I think it's a lot of it's just the visibility. You know, they can move, and I guess, I know the bait fish seem to move better, too, those days. I mean, I don't know if it's just the high pressure front, the pressure of itself, but it seems like the low pressure days just produce more fish.
Yeah.
So I think I've only had one high pressure day that I've really done good on, and it was in the late spring, and I had 250 inches one day at Green River Lake. Had a 51.5 and a 52.5, about 3 hours apart trolling, and it was just a terrible day to fish. I mean, it was like 50 degrees in the spring all day long, and the sky was high, bright bluebird. We cast and never seen a fish, and then we popped 250s trolling like 4 hours apart. And that was the only fish moved the whole day.
Yeah.
I mean, it still made a good day, but that was just...
Oh, no doubt.
It's a terrible day to fish. Only reason we were trolling is because we were just so tired from casting.
Yeah. All right. So, I got a question here. You got a lot more experience musky fishing than I do. Let's say I'm looking at exploring some new waters. Is that something I want to do? I mentioned in the last podcast episode, I want to try to explore outside of Kentucky. I've not really musky fished outside Kentucky. And now, I lied. I did fish one time at a certain lake in West Virginia. From the bank for like an hour and a half. It wasn't really a full trip, but what are some techniques that
this is one part that Muskie's Inc. is actually handy with.
Okay.
You can get on the Muskie's Inc. website. It was muskiesinc.org.
Okay.
And you just go down to the lakes and say, get in the lunge log and pull up, we'll just say you're going to Melton Hill Reservoir in Tennessee, say.
Okay.
You'd pull up Melton Hill Reservoir and you know you're going in the month of May. And you just pull up, you type in May, search May. Okay. And then you'll see all these listings of people that caught fish there that logged their fish in May. You know, you'll see if you see there's 15 caught on twitch baits and 100 caught on spinner baits and one on jerk baits. And
oh, that's cool.
So that's one place to start looking for a tool. So, you know, say you see they caught all on spinner baits. Well, then you can look at the lake map and if you, you know, do some research on it. And if you know there's standing timber, lay downs, weeds, or whatever. So if you see the fish are being caught on spinner baits, you know they're either they're fishing some kind of cover, either wood or weeds.
Yeah.
So in May, the weeds probably aren't started good, so they could be on timber.
Yeah.
So that gives you something to start with. So if you're fishing new water, I always do this, like if I'm going to pre-fish a tournament, I always look and see what people were catching fish on previously in other years.
Okay.
And, you know, and that gives you an idea what to use for lure-wise. Your lure knowledge of where to use these lures are playing a lot to effect then. You know, if you see all the fish were caught on bondies, you know, you're like, well, you know, not to go fish 2 feet deep in back of a cove, you know.
Yeah.
You might want to fish a break line or standing timber or some kind of river channels or some kind of structure, deep structure.
So, not to stop you there, because I know I've got a little bit more to elaborate on that, but you mentioned Muskies, Inc. You've been an officer since it began, right, at the Daniel Boone chapter?
Yeah, I've been an officer since we started the club, so, and I was president for probably 8 or 10 years there.
Okay, so how does somebody become a member if they're not a Muskies, Inc. member?
Well, if they want to go to muskiesinc.org and membership, click on that, and then it'll give you an option of which club to join, and you want to join the club that's closest to you. You know, if you're in Kentucky, you might want to join our chapter, which is the Daniel Boone chapter, or if you're in West Virginia, you might want to join, you know, the West Virginia chapter, I think, which is 09. And, you know, they got clubs in pretty much all the Muskie states now.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't want to have you on without at least talking about that, too, and giving our listeners a chance to become a member, because they get access to that, right? Do you have to be a member?
Have to be a member to get access to all this, to the lake information and all that. And that's just a tool if you want to fish new water. I mean, it's, you know, there's tools that you can go to, like Muskie Hunter used to log this stuff years ago, and Muskies First, and, you know, get on websites and pages and say, what are the muskies doing on this lake? And you don't ever necessarily have to ask questions. You just get on old posts and read old posts about what's going on. You know, do your homework.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Muskie Hunter. Now, did you used to write articles and stuff?
Yeah, I wrote articles for Muskie Hunter, Esox Angler. I was a field editor, a staff writer for Muskie Inc. magazine, which is Muskie magazine, for probably 10 years, done like this field work for them.
Nice.
That was back in the early 2000s. Then I've done stuff for In Fisherman and Fishing Facts.
Crazy how all this just comes full circle. Like, you know, you're trout fishing one day, and next thing you know,
writing articles about musky fishing in magazines the next.
Yeah, next thing you know.
I've been, like, the same way with the TV stuff. I've been on a handful of TV shows, and I've been on Kentucky Field a few times, which everybody's familiar with.
Yeah.
Backroads and Country Trails out of Minnesota, Ron and Raven. I've been on their show several times.
Nice.
I've been on several, like, smaller type shows and stuff where, you know, the guys come out and want to catch a fish.
Now you've been on probably the most popular platform involving angler podcasts.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I guess it's another notch in my belt now.
Yeah.
This is the first podcast I've done, so I'm kind of excited about it.
Well, I am too. I've been excited to get you on here. But yeah, so not the rabbit trail anymore. Sorry about that. But back to the finding muskie in some, like, new waters. Obviously, Muskies Inc., become a member. That is one way to really help you out in finding out what these muskies are doing.
Like I told you earlier, I used to sit at the bait shops and go with whoever I could fish with.
Yeah.
That's another way, you know. Go hang out at the bait shop, you know. And talk to everybody that comes in there. It's like, hey, you catch a muskie today? Yeah, what'd you catch it on? They'll tell you.
Yeah, I
was telling you earlier when we was talking that the secretive stuff in muskies fishing, I'm not a big fan of that.
Okay.
You know, and the guys will tell you, if you come up and ask me what I caught it on, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Or I'll tell you how I caught it, because I believe it, you know, because I tell you what to do doesn't mean you're going to go catch a fish there. Or, you know, and I want you to catch a fish. That's my idea of my guide aspect of it. You know, I want you to go catch a fish there and come back to me and say, yeah, I caught a fish doing that. That excites me. You know, and guys, like, won't tell you the lures they're using and all that. It's like, you know, I was in the retail side of it before too, you know, selling lures and making lures, and I still do a lot of, you know, like, pro staff work for people with lure companies, and, you know, you can't sell lures if you don't tell them what you caught your fish on.
Yeah.
You know, and why lie about it? You know, if I caught a fish on somebody else's lure, even if they don't do anything for me, I'll still tell you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's just the way I am.
Well, I'm going to put you in a scenario here. I guess kind of putting you on the spot. So, let's say you've never fished Cave Run before, and you're going to be fishing the lake. Say you're going to be going next week, you know, and water temps have been, like I said, around mid to high 60s. You never fished before. What are you looking to do? Like, what's something somebody can do? Maybe try to get on a fish. Maybe try to locate a muskie.
Well, the first thing I'd do is, you know, I'd get me out like a hotspot map.
Okay.
And, you know, they've always got fishing tips on those. I would read through those.
Okay.
Then I'd get on my Muskie's Inc. and look through there, pull up the lunge log, look at Cave Run Lake and the month and the week that we're going. And it says water temperature on the forms you guys fill out. And I said, here's some 60 degree water. This guy caught fish on. He caught them on Weedermaker glide baits, you know, on deadhead.
Yeah.
So, hey, I got some of those. I'm going to bring those. So that gives me somewhere to start with. So I know if they're throwing deadhead gliders, they're probably fishing, you know, timber. Because, you know, they're wanting to use ambush, you know, the glide baits off of timber. So that gives me an idea to look for lay down timber. And I'll just mark me some locations with the depths I want to fish. So I know that fish will want to be hanging in something near 20 foot of water.
Mm.
You know, they'll be maybe 5 foot deep, but they'll be near 20 foot deep with bait fish. Like halfway up coves or something like that.
Yeah.
Or out on the main lake structures.
Yeah.
Near river channels. So, you know, I go near the river channel, find some lay down brush. I start throwing my deadhead glider. You know, boom, there they should be.
So, do they lay like, and this is new to me because, I mean, I've been told that, and I've fished that way before, but with, you know, certain guides on Cape Round and things. But what do the muskie do on a lay down? Like, do they lay under it or lay on it or just depends? Well,
you know, the weather has a lot to do with it. If they're laid really back tied in the cover, you know, it's going to be tough to get them out there sometimes. And you may have to fish the structures hard, but on the day they're really feeding, they'll be laying at the tips or, you know, around the edges of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And they show themselves pretty quick on those days.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had times where I've threw a glide bait all around a lay down and nothing. And it's just like the last throw right against the bank. You know, I'll try to work it a little bit. And it's just like, two glides and boom, they just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like they were just laying right on the bank.
Yeah, some days they do that. And then, you know, those are the tough days. And then the days are on the tip of the trees, you know, that's the days you're really going to catch fish.
Yeah. From there, I want to kind of hit on a couple other things here before we end. The future of muskie fishing, I feel like, has a lot to do with education.
Yeah.
A lot to do with...
Yeah, that's where Muskie's Inc. comes in a lot. You know, we do signs for lakes and stuff. And we try to educate people on safe handling and, you know, use the correct nets, correct holding methods. You know, you don't want to hold a fish up and down vertical or hanging from a gripper with his jaw spinning around. You know, if you hold use it with
everybody's
a gripper.
Everybody's eye sockets.
Yeah, if you hold him with a fish gripper, make sure your hands are under its belly and you're supporting the fish. And just use a gripper to control the fish. Don't use it to hold the fish.
Right.
Just use it as a tool to control it, just as your hand would, you know.
Right.
And that way you're not hurting the fish. But, of course, holding the fish and releasing it and getting it back in the water quick as you can. That's what we're really into.
Yeah.
But like I said, if, you know, you're bass fishing and you catch one and you want to take it home and eat it, or muskie fishing even, that some of these guys like to eat them. If it's a legal fish, I don't have a problem with them eating them, you know.
But right.
As long as they take their legal fish and take it home and eat it. My biggest thing is that in the summertime in the thermocline, these guys are trolling and they catch their fish and they get him in the boat and he's a legal fish and they harvest him. And they keep trolling, and they'll catch four or five more, and then they release those fish. Those fish are going to die of mortality, you know, delayed mortality, and instead of keeping one fish, they just kill five.
Right. Yeah, there's a real good chance they'll die in the summer.
You know, that's my thing about it, and, you know, especially if it's somebody that's not handled a lot of fish, you know, once the water gets over 82 degrees, you know, you need to really handle the fish really easy. You don't want to get them out of the water, you know, keep them in the net, handle them as little as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, you actually shouldn't be fishing with it with that water temperature, you know, but sometimes you catch a muskie by accident.
Yeah, and I should reiterate what I said, because I said a lot of times I'll die in the summer. Actually, the higher temps,
correct.
I guess the oxygen level decreases and they just...
Well, even, you know, our strain of fish is the Ohio River strain, and, you know, they grew up in this environment, so they're, you know, people start smothering out, like, you know, when the water gets 80 degrees, they're all going to die. No, they're not.
Right,
you know?
Right.
these fish in Green River Lake gets 94 degrees and they're not dead there.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to retract what I said. It's not that they'll all die in the summertime, but the high temps can cause them to.
What really kills the fish is when they're at, you know, the thermocline 75 or 78 degree water and they're yanked into 90 degree water from the thermocline, you know. And, you know, this is not just muskies. This is bass. Bass do this, too. That's why you see so many dead bass at the boat ramps in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I'm against summer bass tournaments. You know, they should go to, if they're going to do a bass tournament in the summer, I think they should go to, like, our Muskie Inc. format and just catch a fish and measure it and then release it.
Right.
You know, don't bring it in a boat. Don't haul it around for 5 hours. Just, you know, catch and release. And like the kayakers kind of have that format. I think that's awesome. You know, that's going to help the fishery. I'm just for anything it's for conservation for the fishery.
Yeah. Well, right now, I've been a kayak guy for a few years. I sold the boat that I had and got into kayak fishing, and I love it. I mean, I love being on a boat because you got a lot more space. But I went all out, bought a real nice kayak, got electronics, bow mount trolling motor. I can stand on mine and fish off of it like a bass boat. So,
oh, yeah.
But I like that idea because I fished bass tourney trails, and I like that idea of catch, photo, release.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It's just so much easier on the fish.
That's pretty much where our Muskie Inc. tournaments are ran is, you know, we all got a bump board that's, we all check and make sure they're all the same, just like in the PMTT.
Right.
And you photo the fish with its nose against the bump and the tail pinched together, and we round up to the closest half inch, and when you take the picture, you just take a picture of the fish on the bump board and then a picture of it releasing it, you know, and that's the way we do it.
Now, I'll tell you, I think it's awesome what Muskie Inc. is doing, and if you guys are not a member, you definitely need to become a member. You get access to what Chris just mentioned, fish that are being caught, temperature, the lures that are being thrown, or lures that these muskie are being caught on. So if you're new to it or looking to get into exploring new water, as I am,
well, it also gives you a chance in the magazines and some of the articles that you can see what's a hot lake. You know, some of these guys may be burning them up on, say, Webster Lake or Kincaid or needs other local lakes, and, you know, that might, you know, give you an idea to take a road trip, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's definitely what I'm doing, because I've mostly fished, 99% is fished Cave Run or its tributaries, and I want to explore outside of that and kind of expand. Not that I'm nowhere near an expert on cave. I am not even trying to sound like that, but I want to explore my knowledge even more outside of that lake. I fished Green River Lake one time in a tourney with Muskies Inc. Outside that, I've not really done outside muskie fishing around Moorhead Cave Run area.
Right.
So I want to explore and expand my own muskie realm from that. But the future of muskie fishing, I think, like I said, relies a lot on education.
Well, and the kids, too. We work a lot with the kids.
Okay.
We have kid fishing days, and we sponsor those and buy rods and reels for them. And then, you know, we give free memberships. We give 10 or 12 free memberships a year to kids.
Oh, that's good.
For Muskies Inc., and they can get a magazine. And
also, kids can be a member, too.
Oh, yeah. We have kids' divisions.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, my kids are all grown pretty much now, except for one of them, and she's not old enough to fish yet. But my boy won the kids' division several years, and then my buddy, his kids won the kids' division. So,
yeah.
These kids really like that when they get up there and, at a banquet and they receive a plaque for catching all these muskies.
Oh, yeah.
They get big smiles, and, you know, they might win them a rod and reel or something like that.
Yeah.
That's worth it all when you see a kid walking back with a brand new fishing pole and they're excited about it.
Oh, man. I tell you, I love getting this new generation into it. And,
let me add to this, too. Since the high school bass fishing circuits would come out, we decided to, a couple years ago, to start a high school muskie fishing series. We fished two or three lakes, and, we got some interest in it, and we give away like $3,000 the first year. And fish two different lakes, two tournaments, and we did Cave Run, which would give $1,000 scholarship first place, and then the second tournament was at Buckhorn Lake, and we give like $500 scholarships away. You know, we're really looking for people to help with that. Right. So, you know, if anybody's out there that wants to help out, you know, with scholarship money and help kids in this muskie fishing stuff, we're looking for help.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one of my little boy. He's 4, he's getting ready to turn 5, but back in the summer, we went and fished the Spillway Cave Run.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot easier on the fish there. You know, you got a lot of oxygenated water there at Spillway.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice and cool. It's bottom fed dam. You got a lot of shad moving up. You got a lot of muskie that move up around that spillway.
Oh, yeah.
And so I decided I was going to take my boy. But now, of course, it's hot. And I knew the best chance we had getting on a muskie would be early. So I'm an hour and 10 minutes from the spillway. I told my little boy, I said, you want to go fishing with me in the morning? He loves to fish. He can throw a spin reel really good, throw a bait caster really good, and he's only 4 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a tank. He's like, yeah, Daddy, I want to go. And my wife's like, no, I don't know. It's early. No, why don't you just stay home with Mommy? And he's like, no, I want to go fishing. And I always make sure he has a life vest on. So he got up with me 4 a.m., was awake the whole time, pumped. As soon as I woke him up, he was excited, ready to go. He gets in the vehicle with me. We drive an hour and 10 minutes there, and he's pumped talking about fishing the whole time. I mean, the kid eats, sleeps, and breathes fishing. And I've created a monster kind of in a way. So we get there. We walk down the spillway. Well, it's actually, they had it closed off because of COVID. And so we actually had to park and walk.
Oh, no, yeah, I remember that.
So we walked all the way down in. He's right there with me. We get down to the bank. We start casting. It's getting daylight. So we cast. We end up casting for 4 hours. And, of course, I throw topwater on his lure because a lot of these baits, you know, he can't. I'm worried he's going to, like, not be able to reel in fast enough and all that. So, and I'm like, you know, he may hook up on one on topwater. But we ended up, there was an old man there fishing. He was like, he had caught a muskie. He's like, I've been seeing two or three muskie move around. He was up on top on the wall. He's like, I can see him moving around there. So I was like, I moved up a little bit more and started casting the spinnerbait. And I'll say this, like, I had to set the hook because he's not going to be old enough to set the hook, you know, or strong enough. But I set the hook on a muskie, and that's all I did. I handed him a pole. I was like, here you go, Augie. I said, it's all you. And he fought this muskie. It was only 30 inches. But he fought this muskie, and he was so pumped. He was jumping. When I netted that fish, he was jumping around saying, I'm so pumped up.
That's awesome. But
that was his first muskie. And I count it because he did all the work reeling it in. He actually wanted to try to net it while he was reeling it. He was just independent. But we
caught one trolling one time, and my boy was about 3, and I let him crank it in.
Oh, man.
And it's all I could do to keep my hand to pushing him back with one hand and trying to unhook the fish with the other hand because he was wanting to get a hold of it.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to hold that thing. You know, he want my picture took. And that was his first one. He's probably might have been 3.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then,
there's nothing better.
And, he got pretty good when he's 4 and 5 years old throwing a bait caster, like you said, and he was throwing a, inline bucktail in Green River Lake. And, I just heard him grunt and say, I got one. And I reached and grabbed his, as he was going over the side of the boat, I grabbed his belt because he was real skinny and wore a belt all the time. And I grabbed and held him by the belt and he fought this fish. He was 46 inches. And
oh,
it jumped all over
the
place. We got it on video. We all had the whole fight on video, and I'm holding him by the belt, and he's fighting this fish.
That's intense.
And he landed. That was his personal best for a long time.
And it was really all him.
Yeah, it was all him.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it swallowed the bucktail. I mean, he couldn't miss it. I mean, it was one of those deals that he was going to get caught.
Yeah. That's a proud dad moment right there.
Oh, yeah. Then my little girl was with me, and she was all upset because he caught a big one, and she didn't catch one. She ended up getting one later in the day, about 36 or 38. But both of my kids were brought into it by fire, I guess.
Yeah, well, there's nothing better. You mentioned hold on to his belt. I had to hold on to the back of my boy's life vest because it was going to pull him in.
Yeah, that's what he was. That's all I could do to hold him in there, and he wouldn't let go. He had a death grip on that on that reel.
Well, mine got scared to hold the muskie once I got it out of the net. He seen the teeth, and he was like, I don't know. But so I got a picture on social media, him standing right there beside me in Kentucky. I think I forget the Facebook page, but it's like Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife or whatever. They posted, I guess it's Big Fish Friday or something they do. And they ended up, I think it was last week or week before last, they actually posted that picture of him.
Awesome. I'll have to check it out.
So, but yeah, man, there's nothing like fishing in general.
With a kid, especially.
And getting a kid into it and seeing their face when they hook up on a big bass or a big muskie or whatever.
That's another thing that really... We're trying to focus on muskies and just bring kids into this because, you know, the kids are the future to the muskie fishery. You know, that's what we're doing this. Right. You know, it's conservation, so they'll have something to fish for.
Right. And, you know, even outside of muskie, fishing in general, and this saying is so true. You know, you give a man a fish, you know, you feed him for a day, you teach a man to fish, he'll never be able to buy drugs. He'll never be able to afford drugs.
Exactly.
So it's one of those things, man. It's such a good hobby for me. I'm so passionate about it. It's almost a lifestyle, and it is a lifestyle to a lot of people, especially if they do it full-time. Like you did, you know, full-time guiding and stuff. It's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of sacrifice in that. A lot of people don't realize how much goes into guiding and fishing in general. But getting these kids into it, man, getting them loving this realm of this sport of fishing is unlike anything else. I've done a lot of things in my life, you know, a lot of different hobbies. There's nothing to me that drives me like fishing. I don't know if it's just the pursuit of bass, muskie, crappie, whatever, or, you know, not knowing what you're going to catch, you know, on that next cast or whatever. But I'll tell you this, when I transitioned into muskie fishing, and I said this earlier, you know, all fishing styles have their own realm of difficulty and passion and things that really make it awesome. But muskie, to me, there's just absolutely nothing like muskie fishing.
I got tickled. I seen your buddy Cameron there posted that he raised a giant fish, and it like haunted him for weeks. He just made posts about it. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, I've been there.
You needed therapy, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I had to send him a post like, man, I raised a fish, you know, almost 30 years ago that was 55, 56 inches in Buckhorn Lake.
Gee.
And I had clients from Minnesota, and it's actually former Muskie Inc. presidents from Minnesota. You know, they said that's the biggest fish they'd ever seen at the time. And, you know, you're looking at a, you know, almost 48, 45 pound fish. And it was on a, you had double cowgirls back then. This was a Wendell number 8 bucktail with 3 big bucktails on it. And, you know, probably still a 12 inch bucktail. And this fish come in and so big it couldn't do a complete figure eight on it or a circle. You know, she'd have to go out and turn and come back. And she made like 3 swipes at the bait. And my heart stopped every time. And that's the biggest fish I've ever seen. I can replay that in my mind like slow motion. Like anytime I can be not even thinking about anything and I had to just flash up. It's like, there it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll never forget that.
Yeah. I had a guide tell me, I won't mention his name. He probably doesn't care if I tell the story, but he's a guide on Cape Run, a good friend of mine. But he said he had a boy out. He was guiding with a young boy. I forget the boy's age. And they hooked up on a muskie. I guess it was dragon suckers.
Mm-hmm.
And they hooked up on a muskie. And they got it to the boat, but it ended up throwing a hook. But he said it was the biggest muskie he'd ever seen in his life. He said, I've been guiding a long time. He said, I was so sick. He said, I was thrown up over the side of the boat. He said, the little boy was crying. He said, I did not know where to go from there. He said, there was literally like a 10, 15 minute period where I was just like,
He couldn't talk
speechless.
To nobody.
Yeah, he said, I was so sick.
I kind of did the same thing at Green River Lake. We had a client, and he had a younger boy with him, probably 10 years old. Had a big fish strike a 5-ounce trolling spinnerbait in a turn. The reel went off. I picked the rod up. I couldn't even get the rod out of the rod holder. I was like, man, this is massive. And the fish come up tail walking. It was, you know, mid-50s inch fish. And it's just one of the biggest fish I probably had on in the boat. And I'm trying to hand this rod to this 12-year-old kid. And I was like, I'm trying to keep slack out of the line, too. So I'm sitting cranking on this fish, and I'm trying to reach it to him. And when I reach the rod to the kid, the fish comes off. So the father looks at me like, you know, I'm the devil.
Yeah.
I was trying to steal his fish. I said, honestly, I'm trying to get the rod to the fish and keep slack out of it. I said, that was the bad part of catching one trolling and trying to hand it off.
Right.
But, you know, the kid was devastated. And I was probably because I wanted the kid to catch the fish more than anybody.
Right.
You know, you can't make guide money with you catching the fish. The kid's got to catch the fish.
Right.
Or the client. You know, later that day, they end up getting their personal best of 46, but it would have been a lot better if it was a 56.
Yeah. Well, it's like I went out with Tim Barker, me and my buddy Keno and his boy. First time I ever went muskie fishing. I say legit muskie fishing. I tried it before and didn't know what I was doing. I was probably throwing glide baits in midsummer, you know, in open water. I don't know. But I actually went out with Tim, and we were trolling, hooked up on a muskie. It was like a 40, 41, something like that. And, of course, Cade, Keno's boy, was, you know, he was going to be the first one to fight a fish. You know, he ended up being the only fish we caught that day. But I remember Tim grabbed it, was cranking on it, kind of same thing you were doing. He was cranking on it, handing it to Keno, or handing it to Cade. He's like, keep reeling, don't stop, keep reeling, don't stop.
Yeah.
You know, don't let there be slack in the line. But I remember when he picked it up and set the hook, didn't really have to set the hook, but
he's trying to get the slack out.
Yeah,
right.
He's trying to keep slack out and reel and handed it off.
Yeah,
I remember that.
That's what I was doing the same thing. Yeah.
So I've definitely had muskie throw hooks before. I'll tell one on myself real quick, and then I'll shut up. But I was trolling on my kayak. Like I said, I got a troll motor and stuff, so I can troll pretty good a lot. And I can go about 4 or 4.5 miles an hour. So I was trolling on my kayak last year and hooked up on a monster. But I was trolling 2 rods. I thought I got hung up, and so I just turned my trolling motor off, start reeling the other one in nonchalantly because I'm like, crap, I'm hung up again, you know, because I went through a bunch of timber, and I'm reeling, then all of a sudden I see my rod still pop, 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 rod tip. I'm like, oh, crap, that's a muskie. So I hurry up and reel this one in, and then by the time I grab this rod and pull it out of the rod holder, I see this giant muskie. I say giant. He was over 40. Was he a 50? No. But he was, you know, he was a big muskie. Jump and threw the hook. I just watched the lure come right out of its mouth. And I was like, ah. You know, so it was just that moment of, if I would just grab that and start a reeling just to make sure. So, but anyway. Yeah, guiding is one thing I don't think I'll ever do. I'm not that intelligent, but I'm sure you've got horror stories and you have awesome stories.
Oh, yeah. Some of the horror stories is when you take somebody out that's never musky fished and they catch 5-6 fish in a day and they're disappointed. You know, and you're pumped. It's like, man, this has been a great day. And they look at you like, you know, you just robbed me.
It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's happened several times.
Man.
You know, and you're like, you just don't know what you did.
Man, you raise a fish in a day. That's a good day.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's... And those days are the tough days to, you know, when you're asking for money for someone, you've seen one fish all day and they've never been musky fishing. They don't know what to expect.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, and that can really turn somebody off to muskies. And, you know, I try to explain to everybody, you know, what the situation is and what to expect on the trip. And, you know, it's not, it's not as, you know, I guess 20% of the people go out catch fish. I guess that's roughly what you come to.
Yeah.
But I like to have a higher percentage than that. So, you know, I try to keep my clients with the most high percentage lures for that time of year and keep them in a high percentage location. That's one good thing about the way I guide. I don't guide on one particular body of water. I go to whatever the hot body of water.
Yeah.
If Buckhorn Lake's jacked up and they're not biting there, I'll go to the Kentucky River system. If it ain't working there, I'll go to the Redbird River system. I try to stay on wherever I think I can catch my client's fish.
I've yet to musky fish Kentucky River.
It's an awesome fishery.
You need to do it.
The upper portions of the river has it's real scenic and lots of fish. There's three forks of the river, and each fork has kind of a different fishery. It's kind of neat.
Oh, yeah?
You know, the North Fork is shallow and swift and sandy with lots of big fish.
You talking about big musky or?
Yes. Okay. I mean, the average fish is probably 40, 42 inches.
Hmm.
I've got a 51 out of there that weighed almost 40 pounds. It was on a Widowmaker glide bait in late March, kind of a pre-spawn deal.
Hmm.
Then you get to the Middle Fork River, and it's kind of in between the South Fork and the Middle Fork. It's kind of a slower system with slow deep pools and... it's got a lot of shad in it,
okay.
And so the fish will take smaller baits, and you're just not hardly as active in the winter months. But then you can go to the South Fork, which is a moderate, but kind of like a classic wild river system. It's big, long pools and lots of rapids and rocks and shoals, and then lots of rock and timber in it. But, you know, they're basically sucker feeders in there, and you use lots of pool baits and gliders and stuff like that.
So, can you get a boat on all three?
Yeah, you can get a, you know, prop boats on a lot of this stuff.
Okay.
But you can get canoes and kayaks on all of it.
I was going to ask about kayaks. Obviously, I'm a kayak guy, but all you guys are listening that may be kayak fishermen, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about these musky ink outings. You don't have to own a boat to fish them.
Yeah.
You know, you can fish from the shore or fish from kayaks.
That's good.
You know, or a John boat. You know, if you want to, you're not limited to having, you don't have to have a $50,000 muskie boat to go fish these out.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a Walmart canoe.
Yeah.
Just show up and fish, you know, and everybody's going to treat you as equal, you know, just like you were fishing in the $50,000 boat, and there's nobody going to look down on you.
Right. Yeah, I seen the last time I fished the Green River.
We had kayakers fishing that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, two kayakers.
Nice. I know there was a couple John boats.
Yeah, we had John boats and kayakers both.
I'm going to have to just use my kayaking one just to do it. How many more outings is there going to be?
I think we'll have an open water outing coming up in November.
Okay.
But and then we were talking to the Western North Carolina guys about having a February tournament possibly.
Okay.
On Mountain Hill Reservoir in Tennessee.
So you guys just completely shut down for like December and January, or is it just...
Yeah, because a lot of the guys are deer hunting. That's a lot. We lose a lot of our hardcore fishermen to deer season. And then...
dang deer hunters. No.
Yeah. I mean, it just gives us more water to fish. And that's usually... used to be when I guided more. It used to be my peak guiding months, too, was in December, January, February in the river system.
I like to deer hunt, too. I was just messing. But... so that's, I got one more question. So how many, I guess each, area has its own chapter. How many chapters are there? How many states have Muskies?
I think there's like, there's in the 60s in the chapter. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's 60-something chapters.
Wow, so it's a lot bigger than I thought.
Some of them are, yeah, there's around 10,000 members possibly. Maybe more or less right now. I don't know exact running count, but
okay.
And our club has been up as high as 150 active members, and I think we're around 50 or 60 active members right now. A lot of guys still fishing, haven't renewed their membership yet.
So this open water tournament in November, you can fish it in a kayak or whatever.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just for Kentucky water either. It'll be open water anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're going to do like a battle of the borders. Any state that borders Kentucky,
nice,
can fish the outing with us.
Nice. Now, how does the? I'm probably asking probably too soon, or probably something. I don't know if you can answer this or not. You might be able to. How does the payout work? Like, does everybody do like PayPal and all that
stuff? Yeah, let's PayPal it in. Yeah.
Okay. You know, by chance, what the cost is to enter?
I'm guessing it'll be $50 a person.
Oh, I wasn't sure if y'all knew that.
It'll be individual person. These tournaments will be. This is not a team tournament.
Okay.
You know, so it's, you don't have a partner, so.
Chris, it's been really good to have you on, man. I wasn't sure if there was anything else you want to talk about or cover that I may have forgot.
Just conservation is what I, you know, really like people to get out of this conversation is, we need to take care of these fish, and it takes so long to get them big, and, you know, we can't have 50 inches if you take them all home or kill them, so.
And, you know, it baffles me, too. I didn't realize, you know, you look at a muskie and you're like, man, this thing's just built to just, it's tough and can probably handle a lot. But people don't realize they can die just as easy as any other fish.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what's really fragile about them is the warm water stress and being caught stress.
Okay.
Other than that, they're pretty tough little critters in the cooler environment. If you ever go on a shocking boat and see how these fish are treated and thrown around, banged around, you know, they're pretty tough.
Yeah, you hear of, you know, especially the summer months.
Yeah. The stress. Well, yeah, the oxygen stress is a big thing on them. Probably more than the heat stress.
And it's probably not so much in the river, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, river systems, you very seldom see the stress on them. I don't think we've lost a fish in a river in probably 12, 15 years. In the lakes, it seemed like you'll lose one or two a year. And a lot of times when you lose a fish in the summer, or not in the summer, but in the warmer months on the lake, is the fish will take the lure really deep, and you're having a long time to get it unhooked, and that's when you run into those problems. So, you know, they swallow, you know, they got a number 10 bucktail down where you just see the wire leader coming out of their mouth. You know, that's rough on them. So that's mostly where we lose fish at. You know, it's just you hate for that to happen, but, you know, it's going to happen some.
Yeah, it's part of it. Yeah, I definitely like promoting the conservation side of fishing in general, because one thing I hate is somebody that doesn't leave the water like they found it. They go down, throw their trash down, don't take it out with them. That kills me.
Yeah, it's like respect for the fishery is my biggest problem too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you need to respect the fishery and the lake, and, you know, respect the environment there. You know, no trash, and no, you know, if you harvest fish, take your fish and go home.
Right.
You know, don't kill 10 others, you know.
Right.
In the summer months, that's my biggest worries. You know, other than that, I don't have a lot of problems with other fishermen on the water.
Right. Yeah, definitely want to leave the water the way you found it.
You know,
and we have some for the next guy.
Yeah, we have issues with overharvest on a couple of lakes in Kentucky. Green River and Buckhorn and Dewey Lake, probably more than Cave Run. Cave Run's got the reputation to be a catch and release lake, and these other lakes, the local people just,
yeah,
you know, they keep them and eat them.
Well, I don't think they got to stock Cave Run this year. I said something people don't realize.
No lakes are getting, you know, this is going to make,
right.
Yeah, no lakes got stocked. Cave Run, Buckhorn and Green River Lake has missed several stockings the last few years because of low production. So,
wow,
our population is going to be really bad on Green River and Buckhorn the next few years.
Yeah,
unless we get some, you know, made up stockings next year.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I could see that kind of being a damper, you know, and I guess eventually in the next couple of years.
Yeah,
maybe,
fish and wildlife has really dropped the ball the last 10 years on these lakes.
Well, see, and that's something people don't realize too, is that I guess the natural, I guess they go through the spawning phase and they produce eggs, but what is it? A lot of times the temperature doesn't allow the eggs to take, or
siltation is probably the biggest problem with that.
Okay.
And blocking oxygen to the fish.
Yeah.
But some of these lakes, it's got good feeder streams that these fish spawn in. Those fish, they hatch out.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know, because I was told it was something around 90% of the eggs in Kentucky are musky, probably don't take.
I'd say in the legs it's probably right, but in the string situations it's probably
higher.
It's or probably less 50% blood. Or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
We got some pretty nice native fisheries in the state that people don't know about.
Hmm.
You know, but you can't promote those fisheries because they would be devastated by kept fish.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you kept a fish out of that system, you hurt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, man, it's been really good to have you on.
I appreciate it.
Can't thank you enough. Definitely going to have to do more talk on musky fishing in the future with you.
That'll work. Hey, I'm game.
Awesome. Hey, Chris, appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
All right, thanks.